Thursday mornings, we check in with the city of Bloomington and the deputy mayor is our good friend Mick Renheisen. Mick, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Glass. Good morning, Keith.
Hey.
Are you ready for the Tour Championship that starts a little bit later today? Lovely East Lake Golf Course. Can you believe the tour season is already over?
I know. It's hard to believe, especially with the weather we're having right now here.
Yeah, it feels like summertime. Obviously, your money's on Jordan Spieth this week.
It is. He doesn't play well too many times in a row, or not play well, and he didn't play very well last week. So he's in the top three. You pretty much have to be in the top five to make the to win the Tour Championship. So he's my guy. He's been my guy all year.
He was. And just, again, throwaway week for Spieth. Shoots, what, 64, 65 on Sunday? T9. I mean, he just, even when he's bad, he's good. That's an unbelievable story.
Below his standards, by the way.
That's exactly right.
Below my standards for him.
Well, you're right, and so is he. And five guys with a chance at $10 million bonus on top of winning a golf tournament, so playing for almost $12 million bucks. The top five, well, everybody can win. Rory McIlroy was sixth last year, and all the top guys above him played poorly, so he won. Should be some drama in all of that. We try to alleviate drama by having you on every Thursday morning, and the message that we're trying to help convey for our good buddy Adam Wason at the Public Works is, please do not use the trash and recycling receptacles that are being dropped off. Would you like to reinforce that point a little bit this morning?
Please do not use your new receptacles, your trash carts, until October next week when we will start picking them. Sorry, October, the first week of October when we start picking them up for real. Obviously, the delivery of 15,000 carts takes some time. So most of you out in the listening audience in the city have received yours. I have not received mine yet, so I know next week I will get mine because the following week is go live pickup time. So hang in there. Just put out your old trash cans as you have been for another week, and then we go live in the first week of October.
And with the cans already full, can you start picking them up earlier? Would that possibly be a suggestion, solution, or do you just not physically have the equipment to do so yet?
So there's a little bit of both. The physical limitation of all the equipment has not arrived yet. The ongoing training that the staff is doing with the equipment they have that make sure that we're efficient when we start picking them up with the tippers. And then the fact that the carts that we're distributing to you all are heavier than your typical trash receptacles that they pick up now. We don't want our staff to get hurt picking up the new receptacles, which are designed to be picked up by the tippers and the arms. So that's the reason. If you put it out and it's full of trash, we're going to pick it up. We're going to be very careful about picking it up, but we would prefer that you not do that for just one more week, just to hang in there. One more week until we go live and everything's
Now, does that new can need a sticker on it?
New can does not need a sticker.
Okay.
That is the big change, the biggest improvement, we hope. The biggest convenience that we're providing is no longer will you need stickers on your new trash carts.
But you will for the next 9, 8, 10, 11 days. Don't buy a ton of them. Just make sure you get enough to get you by. I don't even want to talk about the refund program until we get to October, Mick, because there's no point. We've got too many other things to remind people of. Things are getting lost in the shovel. So don't use your recycling bin, the new one. Don't use the new trash bin, the new one. Keep the old system working until October, please, please, please.
We are getting a lot of calls about exchanges already, and that's fine. We do expect that. We hope people will be a little patient as they may have used the default size, which is a 64-gallon, and then realized when it actually showed up at your doorstep, that's not what I thought 64 gallons was. Of course, you can call our customer service people and let them know that you'd like to make an exchange. If you don't mind trying out, there's nothing wrong with trying it out for a couple weeks. You have several months to make that exchange just to see if you've got the right size before you start making, because you only get one. Only one exchange, and after that, you have to pay.
Mick, one of the you touched on this, and I get a little concerned. You say you don't have all the equipment in yet. Are you going to have it by the deadline date?
We will. Yeah.
Okay.
It's either en route or it's being installed at the locations, and they aren't local, so we've had to take some of the equipment to other locations to get the arms installed to our existing equipment, and some of the new chassis are on the way. And if we don't have the new vehicles in, we've already made provisions for short-term rentals, leases, and demos to take over for the ones that might not be here on time. So we're all set for the equipment.
Now, it's not like you don't have a lot of things going right now in the city. One of the issues is all the talk about the convention center, and part of it has to do with how you're going to pay for all of this.
Right. So, you know, this is a county-related issue that the city is completely supportive of. We know that currently the convention center is operated under the auspices of Monroe County by a third-party management company. And moving forward, I guess I would add the current funding mechanism for operation of the convention center is the innkeeper's tax, 5% collected on top of a hotel room, 3% goes to Visit Bloomington, the entity that promotes all of our attractions and hotels and destinations in Bloomington, 2% that goes to pay for the operation of the existing Monroe Convention Center. If you look at the math, now that we know what the ballpark estimate is for the cost of the convention center space and the parking structure, not the hotel, that's a private investment of $37 million, but the public sector side would be $35 million. So you need about $3 million of annual revenue to support a bond of that size, roughly that size. So I'll just tell you that 1% of innkeeper's tax, if you were to use that as the source to try to pay for this expansion, only produces $400,000 to $500,000 annually. So if you do your math, that takes 6 to 7% more on the innkeeper's tax to get to $3 million. That is roughly the cost of what it's going to take annually in revenue to support the construction of a new convention center and the operation of. The food and beverage tax, 1%. Equals $3 million. If you use the innkeeper's tax and you add 6 or 7% to the 5%, now you're at 11 or 12% of an innkeeper's tax. On top of that, everybody that uses a room pays 7% sales tax. So you're talking 19 or 20% on top of your room rate if the innkeeper's tax is one of the considered options. That doesn't seem very realistic to me, and I say that as a member of the Visit Bloomington Board and as a member of the Advisory Commission working on the Convention Center expansion, because we're already the highest hotel rate market in the state. I don't have to tell anybody that comes here for a big event what that means, what the room rates go up to when there's a big event in Bloomington, a football game, parents' weekend, graduation, you pick the date and the event, you know what the room rates go up to. So let's just take the average of $100 a room night and put this idea of an innkeeper's tax at that kind of an increase. Now you're paying $119 or $120 a night instead of $100.
But isn't the point the people that are paying for it are the people that are using it coming from out of town?
That's fine, except hotel meeting planners, people who plan events, when they come down and assess your market and say, well, you know, we're thinking about having an event at your convention space, what's your innkeeper's tax? Because that innkeeper's tax is paid by the conventioneers.
Sure.
And they pay attention to that. Meeting planners.
Well, people that live in this town don't use the convention center, is the point.
Right. So meeting planners may represent 1,000 people. So I've often equated that most of us don't look at our hotel bill when we get a room rate. We look at the rate. When we walk away and we realize what the percentage of taxes were on top of that, we go, I didn't know that, but, you know, it didn't stop me from renting a room. Well, that's not what a meeting planner does. They
gotcha.
Look at that rate, and it's really important to them.
Well, I bet the meeting planners also look at, like in downtown Indianapolis, where it costs you $50 a day to park, or downtown Chicago.
Sure, they look at all the cost factors and weigh them into the equation of whether or not to bring something to a particular convention space. So from my perspective, and it's the reason that the food and beverage tax was enabled locally for the county to determine to be used 8 years ago, I think. Mm-hmm. It was always intended to be for convention and tourism-based attraction investments. So it's the logical source from my perspective. And
so this was put in 8 years ago?
I believe that's right.
Okay. And what are the fruits we've seen in 8 years from that revenue?
Well, there's been zero. It hasn't been enabled locally. It has to be enabled by the county council. The fiscal body of the county is the entity that has to approve it. And I want to say, we of people interested in the convention expansion, because it's jobs and it's economic impact and it's revitalizing an area of our downtown and something that's been discussed here for a decade, is expanding our space. We made a huge step. The collective we's all involved in that. The county commissioners took action yesterday, Tuesday, to move the recommendation from the advisory commission to the county council, who will hear it at a work session on September 26th, and then it'll be up to the county council to decide what funding mechanism they choose to use and at what interval they choose to take that discussion forward.
And Mick, looking forward at that funding mechanism, because that's what people in this, we're not convention planners living here to plan conventions in our town. We get that, but we are the people that are paying for it. So what are the financial mechanisms to it? Is it just the food and beverage tax? Is there bonding options? How briefly, I know we could do 2 hours on this. I know that.
Sure.
Talk about how a bond works different than how a tax works.
Well, the tax is the revenue stream for the bond. So it's the fundamental source that pays for the bond. Or, for that matter, you know, the TIF dollars, the tax increment finance districts. You've heard about that one, that the county's being asked to spend some of their Westside TIF dollars on. Cook's great announcement the other day about buying GE. Those are tax dollars being invested in job creation and expansion. I liken that to the same thing the convention center's doing, job creation and expansion, economic development. That's what some of these tax dollars are intended to do, and I know people don't like taxes, but when they create better employment opportunities and more of those, that's a good use from my perspective of tax dollars. And then the basic services like what we just talked about, sanitation and so forth on the city side, those basic services are also where your property tax dollars go and your local income tax dollars go, and public safety being the biggest consumer of all of those dollars. But these increment finance district dollars or food and beverage or other type taxes, those are largely used for economic incentives.
The counter with which people have stopped and asked me to ask people like you and Marty and everybody else, the water rates jumped 1,000,000,000% in the last 5 years. The new trash program's going up. Now you want to add a food and beverage. Now, when does this end, or is this the price of progress? Pricing of progress costs money, and you have to continue this down this road.
Well, we could spend a little time on each one of those assumptions, but because I don't think they're all exactly accurate. Now, infrastructure costs are expensive. So when you have, you know, 80, 90, 100-year-old water and sewer lines, you know, you don't want your water and sewer to fail. So you've got to invest in that. And that's just, it's cost more to do that today than it did 10 years ago. It'll cost more next year than this year.
That's, and this could have been done 10, 20, 15 years ago as well, but it's getting done now.
Well, because some things were pushed down the road.
And, exactly. So,
you know, you delay them, they cost more, and they still need to be done. So that's the infrastructure side, but, you know, yes, some taxes, while no one loves paying them, they're for fundamental things. Now, would you argue this is one of those? No one's making anyone go out to eat. I know that sounds a little bit rough, but it's an option. You can go buy your food and cook it at home. If this food and beverage tax were to be considered and passed, it's 1 penny, 1%. So on a $10 meal, it's 10 cents. I hope that is kept in perspective when people start talking about a tax, because not every tax is the same. This is certainly going to increase the cost of your meal by just what I said, 10 cents on $10, if it's passed, if it's even the method used. It is what it was intended to be used for. My sense is if we don't use it this time, then I don't know that the other options that people will bring up, the innkeeper's tax, I've already told you the challenges I think that creates in the marketplace to use that tax methodology. Some of the other options, like TIF, the tax increment financing, those will be likely used for some of the infrastructure needs and investments a city will have to make around the convention space if it's expanded to help support it, whether that's additional parking or walkways to get across.
What is the people's greatest fear here, that it's we're going to build it, no one's going to come? Would be the opposite of the Field of Dreams effect?
Well, I suspect there's always that concern, and, you know, trust me, every time I've built something, as a parks director, I crossed my fingers and said all of the feasibility studies we did, all the things that we carefully analyzed, I hope they come true, and they have, in my experience, that has happened, but, you know, there's always risk. It's not risk-free, but we do know from three previous studies that have been done on the convention center, we're the second most desirable convention space in the state behind Indianapolis, with the smallest convention space. We do know that people come here every year and say, love to have our meeting here, you don't have a big enough space for us. Love Bloomington, love everything about it, can't have it here because you don't have the space for us. So that when you hear that from the people who operate the convention center and from Visit Bloomington staff, you know, and you hear it year after year, and they've documented this, they kind of know what the lost business rate is, and the study suggests that there is a market for expanded space that we could fill on a regular basis.
Mick Rentenhausen's the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. There you go, folks. What else you want me to ask him? that's why we bring them on every Thursday morning. This is the stuff that people want to know. These are the questions people are asking. We thank you for taking the time to answer, Keith. Well,
real quick, Mick, are you guys involved in any way, shape, or form with the Cook plans, GE, or any of that?
Well, we are. Obviously, these are county, it's county's jurisdiction and the county's incentives for the most part, but we have been in discussions with Cook about some matters that have yet to come out, and we just want to say we're completely thrilled on behalf of the county and the city that Cook is staying in Bloomington and is anchoring their investment in Bloomington, their great investment in Bloomington and jobs, and revitalizing the GE plant. And I just think that, you know, we would be so lucky, most communities would be so lucky to have an employer like Cook that's going to make this kind of an investment. So while we have a peripheral view of this, we certainly are involved in discussions with Cook, and we'll do anything we can along with our partners at the county who have more of the jurisdictional ways of assisting Cook in this to make sure that that we can help them.
Good stuff.
Trivia.
Yeah, a couple of three trivia questions for you today. No particular introduction. These are a little bit of a cornucopia of trivia
questions.
That's
how we prefer it.
Yeah.
You do? Yeah, a little off 1, 2, and 3 here. All right. So the first one is, several portions of the Beeline Trail were closed yesterday so that routine work could be done. Now, this is not because of the sewer interceptor work. This is just routine.
Well, there goes one of my answers.
Yeah, sewer was
one of
my first guess.
So I'm taking that one off the equation. So is it A, chemical applications for some invasive species vegetation control, B, surface cleaning of beeline artwork, C, installation of new water fountains, or D, placement of pumpkins and other fall decorations?
I'm going to say A.
Yeah.
Some kind of chemical stuff.
I'm going with chemicals, because that's got to keep people away from that.
Yeah, due to our integrated pest management program, we definitely close areas wherever there's a chemical application treatment, golf course, or we rarely use it, by the way, but in this case, this was a pretty invasive species that we were trying to contain and control around the beeline, so that parts of the trail were closed just for a little bit.
Now
you
know why. Exactly
right. Treated by certified pesticide applicators, I would add as well. So. All right, question number two. Mayor Hamilton has designated this year's official trick-or-treat hours as...
Oh, boy.
You have to listen carefully here. Saturday, October 28th from 5 to 7. Sunday, October 29th from 6 to 8. Monday, October 30th from 7 to 9. Or Tuesday, October 31st from 5:30 to 8:30.
Tuesday, October 31st. The same day we have the Halloween parade, the same day we have Halloween.
I'll go with that, too. Yeah, it's got to be Halloween.
That is right. It is Tuesday, October 31st from 5:30 to 8:30.
Yeah, 3 hours, man. No official
always
2 hours.
Always on
hour,
the 31st. You guys were smart enough not to be tricked by Diane today.
That's exactly
right. She was trying to fool you with a lot of technical
details.
Hey, yeah.
We have our 4th of July party parade on the 4th of July. We do Halloween on Halloween. That's how we do things.
We got it.
And by the way, one of the most frequent call questions in the month of October is, when are the trick-or-treat hours?
That's right.
So now we've had it out there early.
Yeah.
For those
you're
that
really
last.
Ahead
we'll
of them.
Because, you know, if they're not official, no kids are going to be asking for candy on that night. Gee,
we'll have to remind them, too. All right, and here's the final question. It does relate to a topic today. When was the last time changes were made to the city sanitation system? Was it A, 1900?
Oh, boy.
B, 1993? C, 1973? Or D, 2000?
I'm going to go 1993.
Oh, it's got to be 2000. 2000!
Oh, Keith got you today. Glass.
Oh, you waited 25 years to fix this deal?
1990. That's when the sticker fee was added. So it's 25 years later almost. We're eliminating stickers.
There you go.
Keith's a big winner. Yeah.